And welcome back to the next episode of Like Anime. It's an anime talk show. We talk about the current running anime, maybe some other surprises. You never know. My name's George, and with me as always is Tony.
Surprise! You said there'd be surprises. I just wanted to...
Let's just get it out from the top. I was surprised.
You were. I could tell.
I don't know if I can carry on. Some things can't be undone, but I'll try to gather myself. Thanks for that. How are you, Tony? Are you surprised?
That it's Father's Day?
It's Father's Day.
No, I'm not surprised by that. It happens every year.
Shout out to all the same time. The dads.
Yeah. If you're a dad, hey. If you're not a dad, hey.
I suppose we're going to get to 2-year eternity later. You know, we'll end with that. But, like, I'm assuming we could tie in some Father's Day things. And then, that's kind of... We'll see what else. We'll see what else we can shoehorn in as a Father's Day.
Not a lot of fathers in anime, to be honest with you.
That's true. Well, I was just saying off mic that there's a lot of mommy issues this season that we've witnessed. But not a lot of daddy. But maybe as we go through it, we'll...
Maybe that's speaking to fathers being less likely to cause issues in their children. It's Father's Day. Let's just give them that for now.
All right, yeah, yeah.
Let's just pretend.
You can do no wrong, dads. Enjoy your day.
I don't know what we're doing.
This is passive aggressive. Have a passive aggressive Father's Day. No one's ever had any daddy issues. And let's start with a little show called Odd Taxi.
I was thinking of a funny bit that I could have done, but then you introduced the next show. You said passive aggressive Father's Day, and I was like, oh, so now they get their own day just because they knocked someone up? Sounds like something a dad would say, right?
After they knocked someone up and didn't stick around to raise them.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, Odd Taxi. Totally off the rails today. This is episode 11 of presumably 13, but we don't know at this point for sure. I haven't actually checked lately. I was kind of busy this week, and
we'll see. I hope it gets as many episodes as it needs to do its thing, because it's been rocking it so far.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in this episode.
There is, and neither of us took very many notes, but...
That was my first note, that there's a lot going on in the episode.
There's a lot going on. Take note of all the things. You know, you remember. So we start this episode, I know that. I know where we can start is with Rui, who I had mentioned last week is maybe being... We were throwing a bunch of theories at the wall last week with Odd Taxi.
Wait, who?
Rui is the lead singer of Mystery Kiss.
Okay.
She's the you know, white, floppy-eared dog girl. Uh-huh.
The lead singer of Mystery Kiss.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just adding even extra explanation. But we were throwing a bunch of theories at the wall last week, and one of the ones that I had that I remember is that, like, you know, we haven't seen her in a while, and we got this doppelganger of Mitsuya, who's one of the masked people, and maybe Rui had something to do with that. I even suggested, we had a bunch of theories, but I suggested that, like, maybe she got jealous of the original Mitsuya or something, and that actually happens. Not exactly as I... You know, as simply as that. We get Rui's backstory and what happened with all three got recruited. We got Mitsuya, Ichimura, and Rui. They all get recruited at the same time for this idol agency or talent scout or something.
Yeah.
And so they put them all in an idol group. And originally, there's no masks. And originally, Rui is going to be the lead, but then some random, like, higher up. Producer or a CEO or someone in the record label, or I don't know, he had some sort of sway.
So I think there's a little bit more kind of behind the scenes of this than is totally explained there, because so that higher up guy is a producer, as you said, but isn't the owner of the record label the Yakuza boss guy, and his friend is Gray Cat's father, right?
I Okay, I agree with the last part. I'm confused on if he actually, if the Bane boss, mafia boss or whatever, is runs the record
runs
label.
The record company. Yeah. Okay, maybe not. That. I might just be. I don't know.
That could be. But yeah, I'm unclear on that.
Sort of. That's why I sort of got the impression this episode, because I think that is why I sort of got the impression that this producer who comes and like says, we're going to make her the new lead, the gray cat. What's her name?
Mitsuya.
Mitsuya. Okay. So we're going to, you know, he says, make Mitsuya the lead.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that was because he's sort of under orders from the boss of the company, who's the Yakuza boss, I think, who's friends with her father. I don't know. It just seems like it's all, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, it could be. It's an interesting angle that I hadn't considered. But definitely the things that are revealed with this aspect of it, that pick up from last week, of course, confused me even more, because I don't know if you had more on that, but it leads up to Rui getting really jealous of Mitsuya because of this, because she was supposed to be, you know, originally she was supposed to be the lead. And so she like goes to confront Mitsuya, but she's like, if she can't, she's like, is going to kill her. She's like,
yeah,
you know, but she's not going there directly to kill her. She's like, I'm going to see if, you know, I can, you know, get her to talk her into it,
Her into stepping down or whatever. Yeah.
Taking a back seat or whatever. But when she, and then she go, I don't know where they're at. That's what I was confused about. Cause they're like in like
where they meet up.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It's at the talent agency headquarters.
And it's just at night though. And it's in a conference room, and she walks in and Mitsuya is there, and someone beat her to the punch. She's already dead.
Yeah.
And then right at that moment, Yamamoto walks in from an adjacent room and doesn't seem to know. It seems to be discovering that Mitsuya is dead at that moment. But it seemed a little too happenstance. And then Rui, he's like, did you kill her? And Rui like says, no, I just, you know, I was going to, but. And then Rui even remarks that like Yamamoto didn't question her on that. He just accepted it, you know? And so that made me suspect him even more, because the convenience of him just walking in right after she had walked in to an empty conference table, you know, there's, and then, or a room, I mean, except for her in it. It just seemed, I don't know. I'm like, okay, what's going on there? And why? And that's the main question, right? Like, you know, clearly we understand Rui's motive, but now it's unclear of who else wanted to kill her.
Right. And yeah, why would Yamamoto want to kill her?
Yeah. Or was he just trying to cover it up or something?
He was just trying to cover it up because Rui is really like the draw for the idol group, right? Mm-hmm.
And Yamamoto wants her to be the lead.
Yeah, that's true too. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
So maybe they both had that. And he seems to, he is working for, you know, the boss, whoever that is. But he seems to care more about Mystery Kiss than he does, you know, whatever the hierarchy of his.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to manage both, but he really like, you know, he's really invested in what he's doing with the idol groups and stuff.
Right. Yeah. He just sort of got roped into the Yakuza thing, probably the way that others have been in this show.
And they have some sort of dirt on him that he hinted at last week. Yeah. But so, yeah, that's kind of the first half of the episode. Oh, well, then they also show like Rui being part of the body disposal. And for some reason they just, you know, Yano is there and they kind of take care of all that. And they just dump her with cinder blocks and all that, like right near Yano's hideout. Like,
yeah, right outside.
It's just like, let's just go right here. Who cares? And then that bites them in the... well, actually, I mean, that leads later into this episode, Dobu catching on to this and being like, they're probably going to move their hideout. So this changes our whole plan, at least with that aspect of like, you know, going back to their hideout to get, you know, all the money instead of just getting 90% of it or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's the first half. Did I miss anything?
I don't know. My second note says I should have taken notes, I guess.
A lot of things happened. I should have taken notes.
I guess.
No. I guess.
Literally the two notes I have. So I'm remembering it all as you're talking about it. So, you know.
So then, okay, so I guess carrying on from there, you know, as we already learned last week, Mitsuya's body is recovered. Oh, and during the whole process of this, when she was killed and they disposed of her body, they very slyly replaced her with a girl that had tried out and not made it, but looks similar, you know, similarly colored, cute cat girl.
Yeah.
And then they imposed the mask thing, right,
yes,
for obvious reasons. And the other backup, Ichimura, kind of just goes along with it, even though she's not thrilled. And so then this leads to the current day when they find the body. Mystery Kiss is now going to have a press conference. This is like a thing they lead up to in the second half of this episode of they're going to, you know, officially comment on, you know, the passing of Mitsuya and reveal this backup. But then it was unclear because like right when they're about to do that, Odokawa calls Yamamoto and is like, hey, I know that you guys, you know, that's not the same girl and you switched them out and all this. And so then when they go out and do the press conference, Yamamoto just kind of comes clean about all of it. And so I was like, was he not going to do that? Had Odokawa not, you know, called him and revealed what he knew? I was a little fuzzy on that, if that was like...
I mean, no, he would have had to reveal that anyway, because they would know... I mean, they had already identified her as the girl from Mystery Kiss, but the other girl was taking her place, and they would know that she had died prior to, like, all of the stuff that's happened since she died, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
It's like Odokawa has this keen sense on recognizing people, and so in my head now, there's not really, like, a mystery with it, Kiss... no, it's not a mystery with it because originally it was like, oh, that, you know, there's like a doppelganger or whatever. But now we know that the original Mitsuya was killed and that they got a replacement for her.
Right.
And so Odokawa was likely recognizing the replacement and the body they found of the original. He doesn't know. He doesn't recognize her. And so when he saw it on the news, he was like, that's not who they say it is based on what he thought, or, you know, thought she, based on who he thought she was.
Right, which makes me wonder if Odokawa is the one that drove her that night, because that's part of the thing too. Is there, the trains were not running that time of night when Rui had suggested that Mitsuya meet with her, and Rui said just take a cab and I'll pay you for it. So she took a cab there, and they talk about, you know, trying to find the cab so that they can, you know, make sure no one can identify her or something. And this
destroy
is when they're
the
still
evidence.
Trying to cover it up. But wouldn't Odokawa have recognized the dead girl on TV as being the same girl that was in his cab that night?
Yeah. I guess he didn't say. Yeah, that's a good question. Because it's like he was basically just saying that, like, that's not the same girl as the replacement, right?
It's not the same girl. Yeah, the dead girl is not the same girl as the one who likes karaage, the fried chicken, whatever.
Yes, yeah. But on top of that, he's not saying that he doesn't know. He's not saying he doesn't recognize that other girl. He just doesn't recognize her as the Mystery Kiss that he would know of, I suppose.
Right.
Unless he knows more than he's leading on and
is
up to something.
I don't know. Odokawa is strangely suspect. Like he probably is the one that drove her. He was, I mean, as far as we know thus far, assuming that Rui didn't kill her, which we're pretty sure she didn't, and assuming that Yamamoto didn't kill her, Odokawa was probably the last person to see her alive, if he's the one that drove her.
Yeah.
And then like some other stuff comes up later in the episode about like his parents and stuff too.
Yeah.
And then he's got whatever he's talking to his closet in the earlier episodes. We haven't seen any more of that, but in the early episodes, he's talking to his closet like there's someone in there.
Yeah, and it's referenced a couple times, and yeah.
I don't know.
And people, other characters even know that he's been doing this, so it's like
he's got some issues or something like that, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I think there might be some darkness in Odokawa. Like he seems like such a nice, affable sort of guy, but. I don't know.
Kind of brings to mind like split personality or multiple personalities just based on the fact that his parents died when he was young and kind of raised himself. Like he had to create, you know, other personas to.
Yeah. Haven't really got to the part of his parents dying, but that is later in this episode. Gariki goes looking for information on what happened to Odo's parents, you know, because Odo says that, you know, they might come back someday, but then he finds out, was it the end of last episode, that Gariki finds out that they had died from Odo's landlord,
Yeah.
Or landlady, I mean.
I feel like it was at the episode before last.
Might have been.
But yeah. Because it's slowly been, like, showing bits of him, of Goriki, like, you know, talking to different people and digging deeper.
And so when Odo's parents died, it's kind of weird because the newspaper talks about, you know, oh, maybe it's like a double suicide or something.
Yeah.
But Odo was apparently in the car and survived.
Mm-hmm.
But then later they say something about it being a forced double suicide or something, which I'm not even sure what that is.
Yeah.
But anyway, Odo was there when his parents died. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying I suspect Odo of killing not only the cat girl, but his parents.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Interesting. Well, that is, yeah, they do. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't consider that. But it's like they also do say his doctor or whatever that he didn't have any recollection of when that happened with his parents.
Mm, right.
And then he also, shortly after that, was, per doctor's orders, was keeping like a journal of sorts. And Goriki like asked to see this. And the doctor is like, no, I can't, you know, that would be a violation. And then
you're like a GP. You're like a medical doctor. This is like, you know, psychological doctor stuff or something. I don't know.
And then the episode ends with Goriki being like, I'm here as his friend. Right. I care about him. So who knows if that's enough to, you know, get the doctor to share that, but I imagine that is a key item that's going to explain, a lot about how Odakawa, thinks or, what actually happened. Although you'd think if he actually laid out what actually happened, the doctor would know about that, but I'm not sure.
All right. What else happened in this episode that we glazed over? Cause we sort of skipped to the end.
I only got one more note.
Is it about the Mystery Kiss fanboy?
Yes, Imai. Yeah. Okay. He gets nabbed as
predicted. Yeah. Right.
And so Yano and Co have him hostage, and they're basically, they got him early. They're just waiting till the day, you know, of when, you know, when he can go cash in his lottery winnings. And so they get him like tied to a tree or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's one part where they're like, they're driving around in the car, and he's like, hey, can you turn on the Mystery Kiss conference? And and they do, which I imagine because it has to do with their business dealings as well.
Yeah.
So I kind of, it's a very small thing, but I like that wrinkle of like, he's their prisoner and he's requesting this. Normally they, you know, you wouldn't grant it, these Yakuza thugs, but they're like, oh yeah, that we need to hear that too, probably.
Yeah.
And that's all I really think of note of Imai.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's that scene. And then when he's first taken prisoner or whatever, he's like, because this is after all the stuff is coming out.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I don't even care about the money anymore. Like the concert's being canceled and everything. Like he's feeling really down about stuff.
Yeah. Probably feeling, loss, feeling that loss of not realizing that. Yeah, I mean, one of the idols he likes, it was not who he thought it was, and all that,
and then saying that, oh, I should have realized it because she was such a good dancer before, and then suddenly she was terrible.
Yeah, which was commented on very early on.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
And then the comedy duo.
Which I'm not sure still where this is leading, but yeah, I got more with them.
Well, we've got the horse guy. He's having a relationship of some sort with Rui.
Yes, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, yeah. So he's kind of in the dark about everything, but he's just been kind of like someone for her to talk to and let loose and kind of escape the darkness of everything that happened and that she's, you know, the stuff she's holding on to, I guess.
Yeah, and then they're in some like semifinal round of comedy competition or something like that. Him and his... Is he a boar or something? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
And horse guy, what are their names? Do you know their names?
I don't. I haven't written them down yet.
That's right.
Oh, here. Wait, actually, I do have the other.
The boar guy is Kensuke.
Baba.
Baba is the horse. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, Baba basically tells Kensuke that he's quitting the comedy duo. He's gonna quit because he feels like he's holding Kensuke back because Kensuke is very dedicated to this specific kind of comedy. And Baba I mean, there's this whole philosophy that he even tells Rui, you know, that he doesn't really care. And Rui's like, really? How can you just not care? And somehow Baba is failing upwards and it's sort of rubbing off on Rui now. So yeah, Baba tells Kensuke that he just doesn't care anymore. And that they should break up the comedy duo.
Yeah. Which was kind of a coming for a while. Like writing was on the wall with that for sure. And then there was another character, some high school kid who was like a giraffe maybe. And he was like,
oh, in a previous episode.
Right? Yeah. Like last week or something. But kind of like foreshadowed this because he also saw that things were probably going to end between Baba and, was it Kensuke?
Kensuke. Yeah.
So yeah, he was like, hey, we should team up to Kensuke, like, you know, right. Why don't we do something? And he was just like, get out of here, kid.
Like, yeah, he's like, why would I want to team up with a high schooler? Yeah.
So I wonder if with this show, there's usually something to an interaction. So I wonder if he's going to be hitting him up or something. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, everything comes back at some point. And I'm sure that we missed a whole bunch of things in this episode because there was a lot.
There was a lot.
Did I say that we didn't see Tanaka this episode? Because I thought it.
Oh, no.
Did I think it loud enough that it came through the microphone?
Nope.
Dang. I'm going to try again.
We didn't see
it. It worked. It worked.
I feel used.
So a whole lot going on in Odd Taxi. Just as it seems like everything's starting to coalesce and come back together, it all just goes blah, 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 out again.
Yeah. And so
some things are still coming together, but yeah, it's a lot.
Assuming we only have two episodes left, I'm very curious how this will play out. Because I'm assuming I don't know, it'd be great to get a second season, but since it is like an original show, I wonder how confident they feel about that or if they've written, it just seems so well written at this point that like they would have a roadmap. So I'm hoping, I'm praying. I don't want it to end, but I'm very curious how it's going to end.
I was just thinking about, we didn't see Shirakawa this episode either.
That's true. I was thinking she was going to come up at some point, but yeah. I'm glad we got her last week, even though still very suspicious on why she showed up in that specific location. But once again, I guess at this point with two episodes left, presumably there's still a lot of loose threads. So I'm curious how they're gonna do this. Like I would imagine next episode we gotta get to the start this bank heist thing.
I mean, I think hasn't it already sort of started like at the very end of this episode, or maybe that was the preview for the next episode.
Might have been the preview. Mm. I don't remember it officially going underway. But yeah, I think we're both right. But yeah, it's got to be next.
Yeah, there's only so much time left in the season, so.
Yeah, so, and it's probably, I imagine it'll be an action-packed, end of the season. So, next two episodes. But yeah, let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, if you want.
If you guys listening, if you got anything else, key moments, tidbits that we did not touch upon, please shout us out.
Especially if it's something from like a previous episode that ties into something that happened in this episode and we didn't notice the tie in there, because that's been pointed out to us a few different times and it's always something interesting, like, oh, I hadn't even considered that. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, let us know those things.
And it's the type of show where different people, you catch little things depending on who you are watching it and what you're focusing on.
Right.
So yeah, we appreciate that feedback.
Anyway, George, if you could stop talking about Odd Taxi for a minute, could you talk about Megalobox for a minute?
More talking? Sure, I would love to. In this week's episode of Megalobox, a show I'm also really enjoying, I get to talk about two of my favorite shows this season back to back. So we ended last week's episode with the cliffhanger of Joe, not really patching things up with Sachio, but like sort of reaching a point where they can be in the same room and not they started to address their baggage, we'll say, and it's good. It's started the healing process. But then at the very end of that episode, Joe collapses, his hand starts to shake or kind of convulse, and he doubles over, and that was the end of the episode. And this one, we pick up with that. He's in the hospital. He's getting an MRI. He's getting, you know, getting a checkup. And essentially, like, they can't really find anything wrong. They're just like, yeah, like, you know, he's suffering a lot of the abuse from his painkiller addiction, which he has kicked at this point, but still had repercussions. And then the doctor is literally like, you know, he's a boxer. Like, what do you expect? Like, you know, you're going to have a... going to have a lot of head injuries and have things go wrong when you're repeatedly getting the crap kicked out of you. So the whole setup for this of this episode isn't specifically what's wrong with Joe, which I liked as more of you know, akin to a lifelike
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Sorry. It's like coming loose.
Okay. It's more akin to a lifelike depiction, you know, of seeking medical treatment. A lot of times it's like, you know, something's wrong, but you get all these tests done and there's really no clear answer. It's just like, well, that's just, you know, we're not sure. And so that's kind of where they're at, just kind of taking all of the physical abuse he's put himself through. But it sets up this whole thing of his mortality and the risks involved in fighting another match, you know, and what, you know, what he brought everyone through in his life, you know, 5 years ago when he decided to haphazardly, you know, fight the boxer Lou when the coach was in the hospital, and you know, making all these excuses for why he was doing that when really he was running and doing the only thing he knew how to. But once he gets out of the hospital, they're pretty much done with the gym. He's been rebuilding it and renovating it. So they decide to have like a get together and celebrate that, celebrate Joe getting out of the hospital and kind of being stable, I suppose. And it was a very sweet scene. Like, you know, they reminisce about Coach Nanbu and everything. And Sachio's there. Like, he's not sitting at the table, but, you know, he's like leaning against the wall, you know, and like looking away, but like he's part of it, you know. He's able to be in the same room as Joe and not lose his shit. And so Joe then kind of, they want to hear his tales of like what he's been doing, you know. And so he kind of tells them, like, you know, I was, you know, fighting as this nomad character, and I was just running, and I was addicted to these pain meds, and I kept wanting to come back home. But I just kept running until I met this guy, Chief, and he tells him about all about Chief. And they kind of skip over this because we know, right? It's like, yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh, wow. And Chief, I didn't spoil this in the episode, it happens, but Chief dies, which is probably presumed. But not before he and Joe, you know, have several moments where of inspiration, where they help each other. It's a very sweet part of the story. But Joe's medical issues are all set up for this because he, after telling them about Chief and all that, he proposes to them, like, I don't want to make the same mistakes again. So I'm putting it up to you guys, like, you know, should I do this fight? You know, I've been weighing it and I've been leaning towards yes, essentially, but I want to throw it out to you guys, like, you know, you're my family, and it was like the right thing to do, you know. And they all kind of go around, and a lot of the kids are like, I don't think you should do it, even though I would love to see you in the ring again. And then it gets to Sachio, and he's essentially like, he says something like to the effect that I don't think I can ever forgive you, but at the same time, like, what, you know, you want to fight him, don't you? And Joe's like, yeah. And Sachio's like, all right then, like, I'm in up until the point like shit goes down, essentially meaning, you know, when Joe's, you know, he doesn't want to see Joe, you know, get pummeled again, and get, you know, just because they also talk about with his health issues, like, this may be your last fight. And so it's, I forget exactly what Sachio says, but it's essentially like, if shit goes down, like, I'm walking, like, I'm not going to stick around to watch you die, is the sentiment, which is powerful and, you know, ties into everything that's gone on this season. And then, oh, the really touching part is after that, they're like, all right, he's going to do it. And, you know, Gearless Joe will finally be in the ring again. And he's like, actually, I haven't told you guys this, and he whips out this gear, which was Chief's gear, And Chief had, I don't know if I had said this before, but it was a whole thing, where Chief, Chief's son died early. Like, he was way too young. But he and his son had, had made this gear together. They had both, you know, cooperated, you know, to like assemble it, and is very special to Chief. And so he wants to carry that torch. And so he's going to wear Chief's gear, which was just so touching to me, like, especially the way it was presented. And it's like, not only will it help him, you know, it'll give him that advantage of not being gearless, even though he is Gearless Joe. And he says something about, you know, I want to do this my way, and, you know, not just play to the expectations of the crowd or what people expect of me. And I want to, you know, represent Chief and all that. So it was a nice one. Yeah, I want to win too. But it was just nice too, like, with, you know, because they all, you know, all of the people that care about him that are there. And also, I forget his name. Yuri. Yeah, Yuri is was the guy that Joe fought at the end of the first season. They were like, you know, at the Megalonia tournament. There was, you know, there was them too, and in this season, Yuri was in put in a wheelchair from that fight with Joe, but he was out of the boxing game, of course. But then he started training Lou, who beat Joe 5 years ago and lost to Mac in this season. And initially, Yuri didn't want to help Joe, but Lou is, you know, like, he's recovering, but he can't box for like quite a while. But he, you know, he like implores Yuri to help Joe. So he ends up showing up during this, you know, kind of celebration they're having. And so they kind of have a moment of like, you know, I'm here for Lou to help you. And then they kind of shake hands or whatever.
So Yuri is going to train Joe at the request of Lou, who beat Joe years ago.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. I just wasn't sure I followed all that correctly.
But Lou and Joe now have a pact that they will eventually box again, because Lou feels dissatisfied. He wanted to fight the Joe that Yuri fought in the first season, but okay. He feels like he got shorthanded because he fought a Joe that was weakened and emotionally, you know, not doing well because of the coach dying, and, you know, right, he wasn't right in a, you know, a good state. And so, so it's kind of like not only doing it for Lou's sake because he asked, but also because, you know, to kind of look after Joe because he wants to box him eventually. So it's kind of a two-pronged request there. But, and so, yeah, Joe's going to use Chief's gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that scene. And then the other thing that happens in this episode is, so we had the whole issue with Mac when he was fighting Lou. He went into Mac time. What was perceived as Mac time. But actually wasn't, which Mac time is like him like going to overdrive and just wailing on someone, which he did, but he ended up going like berserk, which is turns out to be a side effect of the surgery, the BES surgery. Mm-hmm. He had to, you know, make him walk again because he was paralyzed. And so, you know, he, in past episodes, he has already approached his wife, and he separately have already approached the Roscoe CEO, and he's just kind of like hand waving it, like, you'll be fine. And then he was like, you know, Mac wanted out, and he's like, oh, you could fight Joe, you know, you can't give up yet. And so Shirato, who is a different corporation, is in cahoots with, you know, they have a partnership with Roscoe to develop this technology, is having second thoughts. They keep hearing rumors about these side effects. And so they separately reach out to Mac's wife, and they're just kind of like, hey, like, you know, we have some concerns. And like, they give her this magazine article that the main person of Shirato, her name's Yukiko, her brother is a professor now, that's unaffiliated with her company, but it has written all these papers on these side effects and stuff. It's all intertwined. So Shirato is kind of, you know, circumventing Roscoe and trying to, you know, extend an olive branch to not only help them, but like get some more, you know, information before, you know, so before they can move forward and feel better about it. But then Mac's wife, like, initially is, I think she's trying to not, there's something going on there where she is not being upfront about it, and she's like, no, we're fine, you know, things have been great, totally lying about it. And then a little later in the episode, it happens again where Mac, like, he's like reading to his son and he kind of loses his shit and he like tears up this children's book, which is a story of this hummingbird, which is a very important, I haven't mentioned the hummingbird, but it's a very important metaphor in this this season. It's referenced a lot. Like Chief's gear also has a hummingbird sort of design on it, which, you know, is you know, not directly related to Mac and all that. But anyway, and so she gets worried again and she freaks out on him. She's like, you need to leave. And the son's all freaked out and he's like, don't get near me. And they're all terrified of him because it's happened one too many times. And then he and the wife have a separate conversation after that where she reveals to him that when he became paralyzed, he had this accident because he was a cop. He got shot, became paralyzed. And then while he was in the hospital and there she was evaluating all these decisions, the Roscoe CEO, this son of a bitch, basically, I don't know if you'd call it an ultimatum, but he basically facilitated making a deal with them. Because there's another wrinkle. At the same time, their little boy needed surgery. I forget for what. He needed a transplant or something. And so basically, the Roscoe CEO was like, we'll do all that, and we'll, you know, make that really easy for you. And then for your husband, you know, we'll do that if you allow us to do this experimental surgery on your husband. And so she reveals to Mac that she made that decision in sort of a emotional panic state. But his actual prognosis from the doctors, like normally, was that with therapy and just, you know, traditional medicine, that he probably would have recovered after a lot of work and stuff. And so Matt kind of loses it after that. He's furious, and so he seeks out the Roscoe CEO and he confronts him about it. And he's, you know, Sakuma is his name. And he basically just kind of cops to it. And his attitude is like, what are you going to do about it now that it's done? And Mac like grabs him by the collar. But then the CEO makes a comment about his son, like kind of tying the two together. And he didn't say it explicitly, but I'm assuming that the son also has this BES technology.
Mm.
So that like, is basically saying like, we have you by the balls, like, you know, you and your son both have it. So it's like, I don't know, what's the point in fighting it? And so Mac kind of like just collapses like in defeat. And that's kind of the end of that scene. Anyway, I wish I could have summed up that last part. I really love the whole, you know, the Joe Saccio, and tying it into Chief and his whole plan with doing that. And we only have, two more episodes. I mean I'm sure it's going to end with this match, but I'm just curious, like, thematically, how they'll wrap things up. But anyway, it's a good show. I like it.
It still sounds good. Pretty intricately woven and like good character drama stories and stuff. So sounds like a good one. And in contrast to that, we've got Higehiro.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of only two episodes left, I'd like to put emphasis on the word only in a different way. There's only two episodes left. Yes.
You can only hear so many violins in that amount of time.
Yeah. So they're still trying and failing to make this seem like some big emotional thing that's going on. Honestly, there's only two episodes left, but I'm seriously considering dropping it. It's taken a dive. I don't see how it ends well in any way. Basically, what happens in this episode is Sayu goes home, not Yamada. Yoshida. Yoshida goes with her, and of course, Sayu's brother is there as well, and. Sayu's brother has to make a stop off in Sapporo for some business thing because that's how he got the company to pay for the trip or whatever. I don't know. Something like that. So while he's in this business meeting that he has to go to, which was his excuse to be able to go to Hokkaido, Sayu and Yoshida go and have some coffee at a cafe and talk about feelings and shit. And then they... they're driving to the house, and Sayu says, oh, wait, there's somewhere I want to stop first. So then they stop at her school. And it's nighttime. And so her and Yoshida sneak in and then go up to the roof where her friend had committed suicide. And, you know, there's like some emotional, you know, some like heartfelt piano music. And then it goes into the strings for a little bit. And, you know, she has some sort of breakthrough or whatever. I don't know. And then they go to her house and see her mother. And her mother just, you know, pushes her brother out of the way and then just slaps Sayu nice and hard. Presumably because she's upset that she ran away and made her look bad or something. I don't know. Her mother's supposed to be a bad person, so I assume it's for bad reasons.
And Yoshida sees all this. And...
yeah, Yoshida's standing there and he's like, what? And that's where the episode ends. So,
oh.
So yeah, wow. We don't, yeah. That's my quick summary, and that's probably more than it needs, to be honest with you. It's
damn.
That's what happened in the episode, and it's trying, but I don't see how they stick this landing at all. It's very disappointing. Like early on, it wasn't like a great feeling show or anything, but it was like, it was okay. And it seemed like they could do things with it that would make it better and more interesting than it was. And like, maybe they were just building towards that and they never got there. And instead they just sort of have taken a nosedive in the last few episodes. And I assume for the rest of the season, it's just going to be a straight up nosedive where they're like, oh, this is so emotional. Look how emotional it is, because we're telling you that it's emotional. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see if I talk about it next week or not. Let's move on to, I don't know if I can say it's my favorite show this season, but it is among my favorite shows this season. I really, really like this show a lot. And that is The Saint's Magic Power is Omnipotent. This is episode 11 of 12, so there's only one left. See how I put the emphasis on only differently that time?
Yeah, no, yeah. I felt it.
Yeah, there's only, I'm going to be sad to see it go, but yeah, it's that Yashike vibe. Like what happens in the episode, Sei and the Ice Knight are, you know, in the capital, or not the capital, they're in that other town that they went to, the sort of center of the kingdom's herbology stuff or whatever.
Herbs.
I guess the first thing that happens is we see Sei just sort of sitting on her bed, and she's just saying all these different names of people that we know. And she's just like saying a name and then saying a name and saying a name and saying a name. And then she gets to the Ice Knight, whose name is Commander Hawks or something like that, I think. And she says that, and then that the saint's blessing or whatever starts, you know, appearing, manifesting out of her. And this is just sort of more confirmation for her, and I guess for us, although we pretty much knew more than she did. But it's sort of a confirmation for her that, you know, her ability to use this is sort of tied to her love for him. Then she goes and she talks to the old lady who's in charge of like the local apothecary and stuff, and says, hey, I want to experiment with this this blessing thing. I think I've kind of figured out how to use it. And so then they go and they take some potted plants, and, you know, she does her magic thing on the potted plants. And they said, all right, well, now we'll see if they like grow super fast or anything. And then the next thing is, I guess we get the cutback scene. We cut back to the capital where we see the Grand Magus sort of yelling at the guy that's in charge of the Apothecary Institute that Sei works at, basically saying, well, why didn't you tell me that their schedule moved up? I wanted to go with them, you know, because he wanted to go on this trip as well. So he's been left behind. I guess we knew that, but yeah, it was just her and the Ice Knight that traveled to this other place.
Okay. We're just now seeing him.
Yeah. We're just now seeing his reaction to it and everything. And, then someone comes in and says, oh, the knights, the second platoon of knights or whatever the Ice Knights platoon or whatever you call it is, they need, you know, some more people to do potions and stuff like that, I guess is what they said. And Grand Magus happens to be there and he's like, I'll go. And then as he's walking out, we see the other Japanese girl, the other girl from Japan was summoned. She's just now sort of joined the Institute and is being given like the sort of introductory tour that one gets when they, you know, join a school of any kind. And Grand Magus is walking by and sees her and says, "You, let's go." So now they're going to this other place where Say and the Ice Knight are. And then we cut back to, you know, the place where Say and the Ice Knight are, and they're going out on an expedition because there's, I don't know, because that's what they do. They go out on expeditions and stuff. So they're going out on an expedition, and this slime monster shows up and is, I guess, really powerful slime monster. And Say uses some of her magic to kill some of it, and they're fighting it and everything. And then this giant fireball, well, actually, a giant slime monster shows up, because there's all these little slimes at first, and then the giant slime monster shows up, and then it explodes in this giant fireball. Mm. And then we see the Grand Magus and what's-her-name have arrived.
Okay, nice.
And that's pretty much where the episode ends. So it's really about, yeah, Say kind of refining her ability to use this Saint's Blessing power thing. And about her, you know, still being sort of awkward about being able to even talk to the Ice Knight about it, because like she's essentially using her thoughts of him to summon forth this power, but she can't really tell him that because she's still hiding her feelings for him or whatever. I don't know. It's very cute and very sweet and very,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. It's nice.
Right on.
Yeah. I like the show a lot. It's really good. If I'd taken better notes, I would have been able to give a better explanation of that. But this work week has been a bit of a bear. So I honestly just barely got through all of the episodes before I had to go to work earlier today. I ended up actually being about 10 minutes late to work because I was still trying to finish watching all of the shows. I made it, but nice. I did not have time to take notes. So anyway.
Fair enough. I think you captured
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like when I talk about the show, I could do a better job, at least better than that last one, but whatever. Hopefully you listeners enjoyed hearing my very clumsy, and brief recap. It's a great show. If you're not watching it, just go start at the beginning, watch the whole thing. It's great. Love it. Mm-hmm. There's only one episode left. So by the time you catch up, probably be just in time to watch episode 12.
Yeah, and then check back with Tony Sotz.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to Your Eternity, Fumetsu no Anata-e. This is episode 10 of 20.
Yeah, halfway through.
Yeah, we're halfway through now.
Which is an odd number of episodes, but hey, I'll take it.
And I've got three notes, and it summarizes the episode very well.
Me as well, yeah. What do you got?
Gugu saves Fushi.
Yes.
Rin has to go home.
Yes.
Big time skip.
Yeah, yeah. That's
That's it. That's the episode. All right. That's gonna do it for us this I'm just kidding.
So I guess we can elaborate a little bit, but so Gugu at first is really trying to help, you know, fight the tree monster and is not doing a good job. Just keeps failing. Like at one point he's trying to He's trying to hit it with like a he gets hit.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And the alcohol, the sake in his stomach that, you know, the booze man had you know, modified him with, like spews out, and so he's like, and then it like there's some fire and it kind of like spreads the fire, and so he's like, oh, I can use this as like a, you know, human torch or whatever.
Right.
And so he's like, he sneaks up on the tree monster as it's like fighting Fushi, and he keeps like trying to
barf on
replicate
it.
That. Yeah. And he just can't do it. And then Fushi, like he ends up being in the middle of the battle and like gets knocked down again. And Fushi is like getting mad at this point. He's like, you need Fushi's to get like... out or I'm going to hurt you. essentially. And so, so Gugu's like, I got to run back. Booze man's not that far. I'll go fill up on alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then,
I love the line though. Like Gugu, as he's leaving is like, I'll be back in 5 minutes. And Fushi says, if you come back, I'm going to bite you. And Gugu says, deal.
I forgot about the deal.
Like that little bit. I thought it was funny. Or and that sounds like a good deal or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
That sounds fair.
You got it. Yeah. Which is funny because they, you know, they did so well at establishing, you know, their emotional connection, at least especially for Gugu. Fushi's still learning about things, but like Gugu feels like a monster and Fushi literally is a monster. And so it's like, you know, to Gugu, they have this kinship. And so he's like, you know, he takes his threats with a grain of salt. Like, I'm not going to help you. Okay. Like we're brothers. And so, yeah, so Gugu's like running back to Buzman, which he had already broke away from Reen and had her run back. And so, but anyway, so when he finally gets there, he's like drunk at this point.
Yeah. So when he vomited up the alcohol earlier, I guess he ended up swallowing some of it, which then, you know, made him drunk.
Yeah.
Sort of the idea, I guess.
But then, okay. Well, then I wondered too, like there's some like rupture or something. Cause
yeah. Boozman does say something about there being a rupture.
Yeah.
As well. So,
but anyway, so he busts in and then like, ta-da, like Reen's parents are there at that precise moment, trying to rally her to come home and, you know, she's in trouble and all this.
Right. Well, they were probably waiting there for her. Like they'd probably figured out where she was going to be. Mm-hmm. Remember they were all running back together or whatever. I don't know.
That's true. Not sure. Yeah. I suppose not that much time passed between Reen running back and then Gugu trying to help and then eventually running back himself. Yeah. But a very funny scene because Gugu is drunk and they do not know this. And the parents are kind of evaluating like what sort of place she's been living in, you know, and right. Gugu does not help to.
Right. I mean, the first thing he does is he walks in and he says, "Booze man, I need the strongest booze you got."
And he's clearly drunk. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he's clearly drunk at the same time, too. And they're like, what? This little kid is drunk and he's demanding booze and what? What the heck is going on here?
And then Buzman is like, of course, like, yeah, you got it, kid. And so he's like, this stuff's like even stronger or something. I don't know. He comments on how strong this alcohol he's about to give him is. And he puts, you know, he does the, you know, the hose thing and he siphons it in there. And then he just gets even more drunk. Like, I'm surprised he didn't die from alcohol poisoning. But
no, they said he was going to, but
yeah. so then that's when Buzman is like, oh, I think there's a rupture or something. And then, I forget exactly, but Gugu runs out after this.
Yeah. I mean, the scene with her parents and stuff lasts a little bit longer, but that's about it. After that. Yeah. He runs out to go. And then her parents are like, okay, well, I guess it's time for us to go. Let's go, Reen. And then old woman,
Puron,
kind of blocks the door.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe has some sort of conversation with him, although we don't see it.
Yeah.
Because we cut back to seeing Gugu running. And
I was curious why she did that. She just wanted them to see what was really going on, even though she didn't know, or like, I don't know.
So when they were in the, earlier in the conversation, when they were kind of deriding Reen for not being appreciative of everything they had given her and stuff like that. Mm. Puron said something like, yeah, the real problem is that you don't see what the problem is or something like that. Right.
So yeah, like you don't
get it. She was on Reen's side for sure. And so I think maybe she just wanted to, stop them and have a conversation about that on how they should raise their daughter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, which is, that's bold. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, Puron's pretty bold.
Yeah, but especially to this like affluent family. But also when Gugu is, he's getting ready to leave again to go help Fushi, and he is standing in the doorway and he like drunkenly confesses his love.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
To Reen, which is pretty great. She was like, what?
Yeah, as he's running out there, it's still like kind of an extension of the argument that she's having with her parents or whatever. And he just says something like, well, I'm the only one or I love her more than anyone else or something like that. Like he just like totally inadvertently declares his love for her while trying to sort of defend her to her parents or something like that.
And
because he's drunk, he doesn't realize what he's saying, but yeah, it was cute.
Yeah. That was adorable.
and then he gets back to the forest. And he can't find Fushi anywhere.
Yeah, but the tree monster is now taken over Oniguma.
Oniguma
is huge, and starts attacking him, or sees him and goes to attack him.
Yep. And then he barfs a fireball on him. Yeah. He barfs another fireball on him, and then the tree monster burns down, and the little heart thing or whatever that steals the Fushi's. Breaks apart and this sort of mystical glittery light comes out of it.
Yeah.
and starts sort of floating through the forest, and Gugu follows it, and then it goes into this rock.
Yeah.
The rock which we had seen before.
Which we know of, early. Yeah. Gugu doesn't. Underused rock.
And then so Gugu picks up the rock, and he sort of, he knows that that's Fushi, I think, right? Like, he says something that indicates that, I don't know. Maybe not that he knows that it's Fushi, but there's something special about the rock,
he
right?
sees that glittery light go into it, so I imagine that's why, where he's like, there must be something to this, and he picks it up, and then, but then the creator, Fushi's creator, he seems to intervene, like, he puts his finger on the rock.
Just touches the rock, yeah.
As if Fushi wouldn't have come back to life if he had not done that, right? Even though the glittery magic, you know, went back into the rock. I was confused on that. Like,
yeah, so because my impression is, and I have not read ahead in the manga at this point, because busy week, like I said, my impression of that is that because he has regressed, he has been forced to regress to this non-humanoid form, or non-living form, I guess I should say, that he's not able to make the change, because when he was the rock before, it required some sort of stimulus to make the change, right?
So the rock doesn't have like a consciousness that can...
Right. Yeah. And that is, they actually talk about that when he first changes from the rock into Joan, that now has consciousness. And then the same thing when he changes from Joan into the human, that it's, you know, a more developed consciousness or whatever. But yeah, I'm guessing that he just sort of jumpstarts it, you know, provides the stimulus needed to jumpstart the rock back into a higher life form or something. So
yeah, which is fair. I get that. It'd be funny. This is just stupid. But if he could turn into Dwayne Johnson, that would make it even more confusing on which rock you're talking about. But anyway, sorry. Yes, and then...
Who's Dwayne Johnson?
Is that his name?
I'm just kidding. Yes, that is his name.
You make me question everything.
I tried to say that as authentically as I could so that you would not realize that I knew what you meant.
Who's Dwayne Johnson?
Who's Dwayne Johnson?
Who? Yes, and then as you said, there's a time skip.
Yeah, well, I think, is it time skip or is it, do we see more of them before that? I don't remember.
I don't think, well, we see.
I remember Fushi having a conversation with the creator, but that is after the time skip, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we also, before the time skip and after, you know, Fushi comes back, you know, from being a rock, Fushi's all freaked out and Gugu's like, no, I killed the enemy. And he's like, really? and then after that, he's like, Gugu's so strong. When he talks to the creator, which is after the time skip, but then we see like the parents, it's like daytime, it's like morning now. And the, PRN kept the parents there that long. Some words were exchanged. They had a change of heart, but then they were still like, you're coming back. And
well, I think it was more, they weren't being as forceful about her coming back. She was now agreeing to go back, right?
Oh, and they all ate.
So it was like, they all ate and they were all happy to have Gugu back because he cooks and Fushi says, you have to teach me how to cook. Yeah, all of this happens before the time skip.
Which is kind of messed up. It's like Gugu, after you almost died from alcohol poisoning and you risked your life to, you know, slay this giant mystical creature, cook us a whole spread of food, a feast. If you will. And
well, I mean, he probably doesn't want to eat anything that they cook any more than they do. So
probably wants to sleep. But anyway, and then Reen's parents are like, oh, this food is so good. It's better than our chef. And I'm like,
and they make some indication that that Boozman fixed Gugu, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know how that fits into the time. I don't know.
Yeah. Confused on that. But anyway.
But yeah, they do say he's better than their chef.
Yeah, which like
makes you think like, oh, maybe he's going to go and work for them and they're going to bring him to, but
then he'll be close to,
but then time skip. So, he doesn't go to work for them. Apparently he's still working for Boozman. He's been working out real hard every day. He's like super buff. Interestingly, Fushi has also aged, which I didn't think would happen.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that would happen anyway.
He's like growing facial hair or something.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I wonder if he just kind of emulates like people around him, like Gugu is age, you know, maturing and whatnot. But yeah, it was. I thought it was funny. Like Gugu looks all ripped and stuff, and he clearly looks older, right? Like,
yeah.
Time skip. But then like they show Rain, and
she looks really, the same. Yeah,
yeah.
She's maybe a little bit taller.
Yeah, but otherwise exactly the same.
Yeah.
So we're in the same clothes even, which I suppose Gugu is as well. He's still wearing his chameleon helmet.
Yeah, and a much larger version.
I think. Yeah. Seemed that way. Yeah. And then
conversation with the creator, I guess, is the only other thing, right?
Yeah, and the creator is essentially like you. Although was it before the time skip? Because I remember the creator being like, "You need to leave here,
yeah,
because you're putting these people in danger because of this forest creature is going to show up again."
Right.
But then we get a time skip, and they're seemingly fine. Like nothing.
The creator was also saying like, "You need to leave because you." Like, it's going to continue to evolve and learn new things and figure out ways to beat you. And you need to leave here so that you can have more experiences and, you know, learn things so that you'll be able to beat it, basically. Yeah. But, yeah.
And Fushi's like, I can't leave Gugu. Like, he's really strong, and I just don't want to leave. I like him.
It's definitely before the time skip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's why I was confused. I was like, well, clearly Fushi... I mean, nothing bad has happened yet, right?
Like, right.
They're all still alive.
Yeah. And it's four years? Did they say 4 years later?
I didn't get that clearly. That could have been said, but I
was it some other show that had a 4 years later thing? I don't remember. I remember something being 4 years later.
Yeah. I don't remember like a
this is the only thing that I can think of.
Yeah, no, if it happened this...
Well, no, it was said through dialogue.
Oh, okay.
Like, oh, it's been 4 years since that night or something like that. I don't remember.
Probably was then, yeah.
Okay.
Megalobox had a 5-year time skip that I recently learned, but you're not watching that. So 4 years. I mean,
during the season, that's in between seasons.
Yeah, in between.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. But they didn't reveal it till kind of recently. But
oh, how long it actually was between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you're probably right. 4 years, I mean, seems like it might be a little longer, but just given how...
Just because of Gugu.
Yeah.
The other ones, like 4 years seems about right, I guess. yeah. Before they said the 4 years, they showed Gugu working in the shop, and he's all big and buff and stuff like that, and it seemed like it was maybe more of a time skip.
Mm.
And I was expecting, like, Boozman had probably died, and Gugu had taken over the shop, and Piran was probably gone, too, because I was assuming it was, like, 10 years, but
guess
no.
Not.
No, they were not. Mm. They were not dead. They were still alive, so...
See, I'm curious why, what's going to happen now? Like, why a time skip this soon with these same characters, you know? It's not like Fushi's been roaming the earth and I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just to show that Fushi stayed there and didn't do what the creator said.
And it hasn't blown up in his face quite yet.
And nothing of consequence has really happened, I guess. Assuming something of consequence is going to happen very soon.
Yeah. You would imagine.
I don't know who's going to die next and Fushi's going to become, but we'll see, I guess. I assume someone has to die soon. God, we haven't had a main character die in a while now, huh?
Yeah. It's probably going to creep up on us and we'll be in tears.
Yeah. It definitely did. Yeah. Before.
Yeah.
I mean, not so much with the boy.
Yeah.
We didn't have that much time to get attached to him or anything.
It was like
the first episode, I think, right?
Yeah. 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 It was a really good episode, but yeah.
But then, yeah, March.
Yeah.
March.
She came in like a lion.
Mm. Anyway, so yeah, I guess it's good to see Fushi has, you know, lived, Gugu has lived 4 years and not been murdered and Fushi turned into him or anything.
Yeah.
That's nice to see because I was very much expecting Gugu to die.
Yeah, I was too. And maybe, I mean, I wonder if Fushi, like if after this time that he now feels better about leaving or if like he and Gugu are going to set out on the adventure together or something. They've grown that close or I don't know. Because I have to imagine like what the creator was trying to get across. Like it's going to happen eventually, right? He's going to have to leave this place. And seek out new.
And I guess next episode might provide something that spurs that on. Did you watch the preview?
I don't remember it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't show anything specific that would necessarily lead to that. And I guess I don't even need to talk about it. So it's a preview for next episode. We'll talk
Spoiler,
about it.
Steve.
We'll talk about it next time we talk about this show, which will be in about a week.
We don't want to be like, remember all those things we talked about in the preview? Well, those happened.
Yeah. Big surprise. Ooh.
So let's talk about the this week's preview now. Yes, I think that's, I think for me, that's, it's a good show. I like it. It's still probably riding at a 7 for me, which is solid, but,
yeah, it's good. It could definitely be better, on like the emotional stuff. It has a little bit,
yeah.
I don't know.
The humor is really great.
Yeah.
And a lot of the situations. I guess one of my complaints is with this tree monster. Like, I need some more. I need some more, like, I don't know if I need lore or I need to have bigger stakes or, like.
Oh, like more information? You
yeah.
Mean? Oh.
I don't, just to make me more invested, because it's like whenever he shows up or it shows up, it's just kind of like, oh, that
tree
thing
monster
is,
again.
It's not really like tying into anything else that's going on, you know,
and
it's just like,
I mean, but we didn't even really get to see the fight this time very much. So
that's
we
true.
Don't know how Fushi got beaten, if it has evolved and gotten better at fighting Fushi or something.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it won this time.
That's
so
unbeknownst to us.
Something.
Yeah. It was more, yeah, it was more a, which I appreciated. It was more used for Gugu's sake and
yeah.
how he would help Fushi and
right.
based on the connection they have. But anyway, that wraps up To Your Eternity.
Yeah. And then the next thing that we have is the special challenge.
Yeah.
So George has been watching Flying Witch. He's on episode 10. And then he's gonna name something for me to watch.
Are we still doing this?
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep it brief. I mean, know I say that a lot.
You watched Flying Witch, right?
Yeah. We watched it together before this taping.
Yeah, I know.
Our recording. Yeah, it's good. It goes down smooth. For anyone that needs like a peaceful, relaxing show, Tony's been recommending this to me for years. And not that I doubted it, I just hadn't got around to it. And this, I'm glad I did, because it's very nice. Like, there's other shows like Super Cub and another pottery show I won't name, that's kind of not failed me, but haven't delivered on the slice of life iyashike specifically that Flying Witch is.
Yeah, I mean, this week's Super Cup got a little bit more iyashike with them just playing around in the snow.
Oh, that's
true.
But that's true. But it's like an overall thing. I mean, there has been a couple Flying Witch episodes where I'm like, eh, it was all right. But like, by and large, like, it's just hit more than not. And I guess maybe because it's not trying to also be a hobby show, the witch aspect of it is kind of more like window dressing instead of like it plays into certain parts of it, but it's not like, you know, you're gonna learn about how I do my witchy thing,
right?
It's just
she happens to be a witch,
the whole idea of like a witch's like mundane existence is very, it's amusing and it's fun, and I got 2 more episodes left. I'm not going to get into what happened this one. It was just peaceful, and it was nice, and it was funny, and I enjoyed it.
And as George is sort of indicating, we did talk before about sort of discontinuing the special challenge, because, I mean, Flying Witch is a great show, and you should watch it. But as with any sort of slice of life, iyashike sort of thing, there's not a lot to say about every episode. So I think we can just trim some time off episodes by, you know, not doing that anymore. And then for the special challenge, for my special challenge, what George is picking for me, I will finally reveal that this whole thing has been a sham. I picked all of these shows and told George what to tell me to pick. No, I mean, George did cooperate in picking them, but I knew ahead of time what they were going to be. And I've been, you know, watching them as scheduled. But this week I fell way behind, as I said. And I did get to the show that I was supposed to watch this week, which is Devilman Crybaby. Mm. And I actually reshuffled the order of shows to put this next, because it was only 10 episodes and I knew I was going to be short on time. And I thought I can crank through 10 episodes. And I got through 2 and then didn't want to watch it anymore.
There you go.
I'm just putting an axe in it. I have literally one note. It's 4 words long. about Devilman Crybaby.
Okay.
All flash, no substance. It looked very pretty. It was very flashy, but I didn't feel that there was any substance to it. But I only watched two episodes, so you know, it's not a really informed opinion.
Fair enough.
It's and just a very initial opinion, I think.
I didn't think you'd be into the style of it. It's typically not your your thing. That sort of showy, flashy,
right?
Dynamic.
I mean, speaking of that, one of the other shows that was on the list that actually was supposed to be next, but I shifted around, was Kill La Kill.
Oh, yeah. Which I forgot that was part of the.
I had already watched two episodes of that, like way back when, but I was going to do it again as though I hadn't. But I also made it through two episodes of that, and I would say it had more substance than this, and it also had less flash than this. So I don't know. It's sort of a balance there. I forget what the other show was, since I'm just spoiling everything on this now. There was one other show. Well, no, there were two other shows. we don't need to talk about that one, though.
Yeah. But there was some other one. But I mean, you did fantastic. I mean, you did 10 weeks of, or maybe 9.
I just fell behind on my buffer. So, like, before the season started, I had buffered up, like, 3 or 4 shows that I had watched that I knew you were going to pick.
Yeah.
That I told you were going
to
pick.
And to be fair, the first you anticipated on your own, One Piece and Ranma.
Yeah.
And you had those on a backlog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a backlog, but in the can.
The buffer. They were in the buffer.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've maintained that buffer pretty well up until recently. And then this week I had no buffer left and I basically had to watch an entire series this week. And it just happens that work decided to make me work twice as many hours as I normally do. And that cuts into my anime watching time.
It's true. So the extra stuff has to, you know.
Yeah, and we were supposed to record something else tonight that we're not going to get to as well. But yeah, so no more special challenge. Maybe George will report in after he watches the final episode of Flying Witch, which there's 2 more episodes, so in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Just report in and give like kind of a final, you know, what you thought.
Yeah.
And if I happen to watch one of the other shows that's on the list, I will report about that, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not.
No pressure.
Yeah. We're trying to lighten the load because we've got to record the what we're watching episode. We've got there's a vacation that's coming up in mid-July that we're going to be releasing a couple special episodes that week to fill in, and we need to record those at some point. And once the new season starts, we're not going to have time to record those, so we need to lighten stuff up to make room to record the things that we need to record so that we can have vacations and things like that.
Yes, and make this transition to the new season, since this is the first time we're doing this. You know, this is we're concluding our first official season of the podcast, it's a bit of a cram session at the end and beginning.
Yeah, it was a lot easier last season when we did what we're watching because we didn't have a show that we were doing every week.
Yes.
Yeah. Go figure. Anyway, so that is going to do it for us. If you've been listening to us all season, thank you for listening to the entire season. We've got a couple more coming, so this isn't really like a final thing, but, you know, we hope you're enjoying it. We mostly enjoy doing it. Sometimes it's a little stressful and a little tiring, but we get there, and we still keep doing it every week.
We're working out the kinks. We're trying to make it more enjoyable for us so that it is not only more manageable, but more enjoyable for the audience, too. I think if we're having fun, then that, you know, channels...
Yeah, as long as we're not having like, you know, 3 hours of fun. Like we'd like to trim this down to maybe an hour and a half of fun per week.
Bite-sized fun.
If we can do that. Which shouldn't be too difficult because I've already looked at next season and we've got half as many shows coming out. That's sort of a teaser for our what we'll be watching, which I don't know when it's coming out. It's going to be a week or 2 weeks from now, something like that.
Yeah.
June 30th at the latest will be the release date for that.
And if you want to see all those trailers for the new shows, Tony conveniently made a YouTube playlist on our Like Anime channel with all of those new shows, new and returning, I should say.
Right.
Shows.
And not all of them, just ones that made it past the initial cut. Because there's a number of returning shows that I know neither of us watched
the earlier ones,
so those aren't even on there.
Yeah.
And fair warning, some of them are only available in Japanese. I couldn't find them with English subtitles, so, you know,
yeah,
do your best. It's probably about half and half, actually. But
you can usually get it.
Yeah, I kind of like watching them in just Japanese. I mean, I understand little bits and pieces, but not enough to really get what anyone's saying.
Yeah,
get the gist. You can get a feel for it. You can definitely get a feel for the art style, the animation quality, things like that.
Yeah.
We're talking way too much about the preview show.
We're excited.
We're gonna recap all of this in our preview show when we get to it. So I should probably wrap this up now since we're talking about trying not to run long. So. Thank you for listening. You can reach us on all the social medias and whatnots at Unlike Anime. That's UMLIKEANIME. YouTube seems to be a popular platform for things, for comments, I guess. I mean, we also have a Patreon if you would like to donate to us. It would be very nice. We spend some money doing this podcast, buying like new microphone stands and things like that. Mm-hmm.
We want to make it better too, so
yeah, and it's all for you. We spend the money because we love you, or well, at least we pretend to.
Doki doki.
anyway, speaking of patrons, we got a new patron this last week. We mentioned it in the last show as well, but might as well mention it again. And we have another patron who has been with us for about a month now, so yeah. We can.
And our original patron, who no longer is a patron, keeps threatening to be a patron again. So, you know, who knows what the future holds.
Yeah, we could. By this time next week, we could have 3 patrons.
And maybe someday we'll have a patron that we don't personally know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
But I appreciate it, you know. It's your friends and family who build you up and make it all possible.
Anyway, yeah, that's going to do it for us. I think we've drawn out this ending as long as we can. Nope, not quite. I can keep talking and not saying anything for a while now. George is not that yet looking annoyed at me. So I think I can keep going for another minute or so. No, I ran out of things to say. Dang it. Bye.
See you guys. Thank you.